I'm Kevin Chambers, technologist with NCMM, the National Center for Mobility Management, and this is Conversations with Leaders, a podcast funded by NCMM. Check out our resources aimed at mobility managers at nc4mm.org. Today, we have three segments where I interview Janice Sokor about a discussion paper for the International Transport Forum entitled Piecing Together the Puzzle, Mobility as a Service from the User and Service Design Perspectives. Jana is a senior researcher in Sweden at KTH Royal Institute of Technology in Stockholm, Chalmers University of Technology in Gothenburg, and at the time of writing of the discussion paper, was a senior researcher at RISE Research Institutes of Sweden. In this part one of the series, we talk about the history of mobility as a service and the many ways the term has been used since it was first coined. Welcome, Jana. Jana, you want to talk a little bit about your background and your work with MAAS?
Sure. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks so much for inviting me for this interview. And my personal background is that I'm working here in Sweden, but I'm actually from the U.S. originally, although I've lived in Sweden for a long time now. I came over here to keep studying, basically, after my bachelor's. And so I did my master's here in mathematics, kind of with a focus on optimization. And then I did a PhD at KTH Royal Institute of Technology in Stockholm. And there I entered the world of transportation. My topic was related to personal integrity or privacy, safety, and security aspects around different ITS systems and services. That was the big thing at the time, ITS, Intelligent Transport Systems. Stockholm was about to host the ITS World Congress, and part of the initiative, national initiative around that was to start a so-called virtual research school related to ITS, and the ITS Sweden and various universities in Sweden and other collaborators such as Stockholm City, in my case, got together and created initially six PhD positions in different topics in ITS, and I happened to get one of them. So I had earlier focused more on mathematics and history, actually, but I've always had very broad interests trying to understand reflectively. I think it was a lot about trying to understand the world and people from different angles, from different topics. And so this was interesting for me, but of course, as anyone coming into transportation, it's one of those, you know, societal resilient systems. Transportation is one of those very important systems for society where you realize just how complex it is only once you get into the area.
Yeah, and I can imagine it wasn't hard to find where math and history fit into transportation.
No, I mean, as I think we all know, transportation is one of those areas that needs all these kinds of expertises that exist to be applied in different ways. So in that sense, I also found it very interesting because I was interacting with people with so many different backgrounds, which was also exciting because you learn so much from these different perspectives, these different expertises. So in my PhD, I mainly focused on the user perspective, looking at different cases of different user groups using different types of so-called ITS systems and services in, for example, personal navigation for visually impaired people. I did a case study having to do with certain services in heavy goods vehicles and other case studies as well, but looking how these systems were impacting people's senses of safety and security and privacy issues, and then kind of contrasting that with, in the case of the truck drivers, for example, their viewpoints contrasted with their employer's viewpoints, and one definitely saw a gap there in perceived benefits. So after my PhD, I wanted to do a postdoc, and I found an opportunity at Chalmers University of Technology in Gothenburg, Sweden. And so I started there. And the main focus of that postdoc was to do the evaluation of the UBGO pilots in 2013, 2014. And at the time, the term MOS wasn't really floating around yet. That came more in 2014. So we were calling it a travel broker, I think is what we were calling it at the time. So I wasn't involved in the development of that project, but from what I've understood from the people that were involved, you know, the idea was really something that came up a few years earlier in personal conversations, et cetera. This idea of, well, what if you don't have to own your vehicle? What if you can subscribe to the various transport services instead? Is there any kind of business in this idea? So there was some pre-study that was done, and then the bigger so-called B project got funded where there was actually going to be a pilot. And so that's when I popped into the picture. And little did I know, little did we know, that this was going to turn into a thing.
Right.
You know, so we had this evaluation plans within this project. Mainly, the task was made to evaluate mainly from the user perspective, which we did, although we quickly integrated other perspectives as well, even though it wasn't technically part of our task. As we saw, there were these different stakeholder perspectives that didn't always align. And we saw that both generally and also internally in project meetings. You get these big multi-stakeholder projects, which I personally find very interesting, partly because of this challenge of aligning stakeholder perspectives. You know, different, you know, the public agencies, the private companies, the academics, the et cetera, you know, they all have, even when you have a common vision, you still have different, you know, internal goals, interests, even a way of talking about things and a focus.
Right.
I find it quite fascinating to watch this interplay between the different stakeholders.
Yeah, and that really shows in your paper that you look at mobility as a service from a lot of different angles. And that's what I think was really interesting about your paper. And also you really kind of cut to the quick in the sense of you kind of make pretty clear that this may not be as great as it's being marketed as. You know, you take a real researcher's look at it, like, is this really achieving the outcomes that are being desired? But before we get to that, let me walk through a little bit some of the things that you say in your research about MaaS. And thanks for that background, because I really heard that you have had the chance to look at MaaS even before it was called that, and you've gotten the chance to see these attempts to build ecosystems of mobility options really from very early on, because, and help me with pronunciation if I get it wrong, but the Ubico project was really among the first ever, certainly in Europe and maybe anywhere.
Yeah, it was the first trial of a commercial concept. So some people have critiqued the evaluation because it didn't have a control group, for example, but we try to remind them that it wasn't an academic-driven project. It was an innovation-driven project, a business-driven project. The whole purpose of the project was to see if there's a viable business case. So they were deliberately trying to, you know, target people who could be potential customers.
Right.
And that kind of business focus was central to it. And despite having been in, you know, a multitude of other projects since then, even trying to help other, you know, a couple other pilots get going, et cetera, I think this has really kind of driven our approach here in Gothenburg, specifically with the people I've been working with. This very kind of pragmatic approach, how do you actually get a functioning, sustainable, right, in all perspectives, you know, economic, ecological, social? How do you get a viable service actually running that can last and can make money? And we've, you know, taken an academic approach to doing that, but I really think these experiences have been so valuable in creating this kind of, I don't know if you want to call it more realistic or more pragmatic approach to the whole field.
Yeah. Well, let's start off a little bit with some definitions, because I think there's a lot about MaaS that is a product, or people's understanding of MaaS is a product of the marketing that has surrounded it over the entire life of the term. And, you know, for people here in the U.S. who are, you know, most likely audience for this interview, MaaS has been kind of put out there as mostly from the rider perspective that, you know, MaaS is about apps. It's about apps where you get to choose your options and go. Really, that's what MaaS is. Once you have an app, then you're very close to having MaaS. And you write to be cautionary about that, and to be cautionary about having an eager but naive technology-driven approach.
And you advocate a more systematic approach where it really takes into account the user in a societal context. And I'm wondering if you just take a moment to talk about what you think MAS is and where technology fits and doesn't fit in the picture that you have.
Oh, well, I could probably talk a whole hour about that.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think there is one answer, which is why we've taken the approach we have. Back in, you know, when this kind of like went into the hype cycle and everybody started talking about MAS and, for example, the ITS World Congress in Bordeaux in 2015, mm-hmm. when they launched the MAS Alliance and all of these kinds of initiatives, you know, there was really this attitude like, by next year, we're going to see these services everywhere. And clearly that didn't happen. Don't get me wrong. I'm all for evolutions and innovations in transport. But as this has not happened, and as many innovations throughout history, innovations within transport have not necessarily happened as one has imagined, and even good ideas have disappeared for various reasons, like electric cars existed a long time ago and then just didn't become popular for various reasons.
Yeah, that's a good example.
The approach I take in this paper is just to try to lay it out like, well, it is complex and we need to recognize these complexities and approach them in a more systematic way so we know where the enablers and barriers lie. But back to what MAS is, you know, we kept being asked, well, what is it? What is it? Everybody was trying to come up with a definition. And so we decided to try to tackle this issue and ran a workshop, et cetera, with various stakeholders. And in the end, we just decided, well, we don't think there is a definition because it's an evolving concept and because there are so many different examples of services that at least people claim are MAS. And we found in the analysis that they kind of fall along what can be perceived as a continuum or some kind of topology or taxonomy. So we decided to take this approach and developed what we call the MAS topology, where we have five levels from 0 to 4, where level 0 is basically single separate services as they've traditionally existed in their silos. And then in level 1, we talk about the integration of information, which has existed for years, such as the aforementioned advanced traveler information systems, like real-time information, journey planning, and this kind of thing. Level 2 entails more integration of booking and payment, where you're able to do this more easily via an app, for example. But level 3 is kind of when you're getting into having an integrated service offer with, for example, subscriptions and bundling, and where the MAS operator is actually taking on customer responsibility and guaranteeing service and these kinds of things to the extent they can. And then level 4, we call the integration of societal goals. And really this can occur on any of the levels, but we put it at level 4 to push that this doesn't exist and that this is the vision to eventually achieve this, where the companies and the authorities are really working more closely together in terms of the governance of the transport systems and services, where you have cooperation between them, the data exchange, you know, where even in real time, this could theoretically be working together to, for example, offer dynamic pricing. So there's all kinds of things that can happen if you get to this level in terms of really trying to integrate what's being offered in the services to ensure that they are better achieving overall societal goals. So this topology, we recognize that not all services are quote unquote equal or necessarily should be equal because they're targeting different customer needs. So for example, a level one service with integrated information like travel planners, et cetera. These have existed for years. And as I said, they haven't proven to offset private car ownership and use as one had imagined previously. But realistically, there's little reason to expect them to be able to do this because these types of services are really just offering support for finding the best trip on a trip-by-trip basis. They're not really targeting the entire household's transport needs on a year-round basis. They may be perfectly adequate for, say, for example, people in urban settings who mainly walk or bike and just need to use public transit once in a while so they find the best trip that they need. You know, it can be perfectly adequate for them. But it's not going to be adequate for, say, homeowners in the suburbs that own cars, that have small children, you know, they're running around taking them to school and football practice, and where public transit maybe doesn't have a good level of service. You know, this probably isn't going to be good enough to, as has been demonstrated, push them into using public transit. So there are advantages and disadvantages, clearly, with these different types of services along this topology or in this topology. But you need to recognize, like I said, they target different types of needs. They also entail different types of technical integrations, different types of business and pricing models, different types of contracts, sharing of risk as different types of operators, et cetera. So there's a very broad spectrum of services that are somehow supposed to, that, you know, under this MOS umbrella, that can't fall under one definition, in my opinion. Apps have a role to play there. But again, people aren't just wanting to use an app. They're using the app to achieve something else. And humans have a tendency to not necessarily learn from history. And it's not like I've been in the transportation business as long as many have. But I mean, even I have been in it long enough to remember probably the end of the, maybe the ITS hype or the, you know, ATIS hype, Advanced Travel Information Systems hype. You know, where there was this really, this idea like, oh, we just get real-time information into public transit and then everybody's going to become a public transit user.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly that didn't happen. It made public transit more convenient, sure, for those who are already using it. But it wasn't this new technology, this information wasn't enough of a pull to get people to stop using, you know, to sell their private cars and become public transit users exclusively, for example.
Right.
So I really think that's a very clear example of a similar situation where we bring in a new technology. We think it's going to change everything. It's going to be the Band-Aid to fix a broken leg of sustainable transport. And it's just not enough because it's not taking the larger context into consideration.
It sounds like, as you talk about it, that a lot of time when I hear people talking about MaaS, they're really talking about the full meal. The every aspiration for MaaS, that it has the capability to allow people to not own a car or to maybe only have one, whereas before that maybe a large family might have two, for right. example. And the framework with the different levels that you create also seems like it mirrors a little bit the 5-point scale for automated vehicles that SAE put out some years back, that with each incremental level, you get more towards the dream, as it were. You get more towards the aspiration of, in the case of self-driving cars, full autonomy, where you don't even need a steering wheel. And in the case of MaaS, the full dream, which is that the services are all out there. They just sort of exist as a cloud that you can tap into from your phone. And the services and the framework understands you well enough that it's there for you as good as, and ideally better and cheaper and more sustainably on a environmental front than owning a car would be.
Yeah.
Does that seem like a fair analog? I mean, to compare the two?
Yeah, I think it's fair. And there have been some other similar attempts along those lines, although the other attempts have slightly different focus and they tend to not have this end goal of integrating societal goals either. Mm-hmm. I think they've kind of forgot about that along the way because they have a slightly different focus. But yes, definitely. And I think at least I perceive a kind of a shift right now where there's still a strong drive towards trying to achieve quote unquote MaaS in some form. But I think there's also, you're starting to see a bigger frustration creep in that it's not happening as fast as one had hoped and that we're seeing these unfortunately not unique challenges arise over and over. But, you know, whatever you want to call it, I still think it's useful. You know, if you want to call it MaaS or you want to call it something else, I still think these general approaches are useful and necessary to move towards more sustainable transport in terms of the integration, having this bigger picture, the more systems approach. Remember, it is a transport system, right? We tend to, I think, forget about the system a lot of the time. In terms of stakeholder collaboration, finding the common vision and working towards it. I mean, this is not just a challenge in personal transport. This is a challenge in goods transport as well. It's a challenge in many other societal systems. trying to work more towards a global optimum instead of each stakeholder working towards their own local optimum.
Yeah, that seems like it's in a nutshell, right? I mean, this is an attempt to lift all boats together, if I'm using the metaphor right, come up with a solution that raises all boats rather than sort of a more of a crabs in a bucket approach towards approaching how mobility happens, especially in denser spaces in cities.
That concludes part one of this three-part series with Jana Sokor. In part two, we'll talk with Jana about frameworks to design and evaluate implementations of mobility as a service. Conversations with Leaders is funded by the National Center for Mobility Management. Check out all our resources aimed at mobility managers at nc4mm.org. A link to this podcast can also be found at nc4mm.org/blog.